I'm Peter Medlin, and you are listening to Teacher's Lounge. And if this is your first time hearing our show, great news. It's a really simple idea. We've all had teachers in our lives who helped us become who we are today. And every educator we have on the podcast, whether teacher, coach, or professor, is nominated by the folks who listen. We want you to be a part of this show. Please do let us know about the educators who've inspired you and the folks in your community who deserve a spotlight. You can email us with your nominations and your story ideas at teachersLounge@niu.edu. On our show today is Tiffany Thurlby. She's a PE teacher at Genoa Kingston Middle School, and she also was just named the Middle School Professional of the Year by the Illinois Association for Health, PE, Rec, and Dance. And we talked about how middle school can be an awkward time for some kids, and physical education particularly can be a challenge for students who don't feel as confident in themselves, and it's Tiffany's job to help build their confidence and help them feel strong and comfortable in their own bodies.
I love those moments, and I even go and have those personal conversations with those kids, like, hey, it was awesome to see you out and moving today. This was probably the best day ever. Like, and then they sit there and smile, and you know they take that home with them, and you want kids to feel comfortable because it can be an awkward environment. So it's like when you see those moments of light, you go and you encourage it and you compliment them.
We talked about teaching kids how to lift weights, her love of running, and how much fun it is to introduce her students to the dance moves she learned growing up. We've got all of that and so much more right here on Teacher's Lounge. But first, we have a few education stories we want to share. School districts across the country have received millions of dollars worth of federal COVID relief over the past few years, and that funding expires next month. Brian DiBernardi walks along the outside of Northwest Elementary School in LaSalle. He's the superintendent.
Yeah, so you can see where this kind of juts out. None of this was here.
He points to a 15,000 square foot addition to the school. It's brand new. Kids just stepped in the doors last week. Northwest is a small school where a majority of kids are low income, and DiBernardi says they just didn't have enough space for their students.
We never had an art room. We never had a music room. We were down to using storage closets and mechanical rooms to do a lot of things.
They also renovated another wing of the school, and none of it would be possible without ESSER. That would be Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief. It's pandemic relief money from the federal government, and school districts have had the past several years to spend that money, and it expires in about a month. We're talking about millions of dollars, even in a smaller district like LaSalle. DiBernardi says it made up a healthy portion of their budget, and now that it's gone, are Illinois schools headed towards a financial cliff? Well, Angie Smith says it depends on how schools spent the money. She helps lead school business operations at the Aurora West School District and wrote her dissertation about the impact of ESSER. And her district, like LaSalle, spent a lot of money on capital projects like new roofs and HVAC systems, and they spent less money on things like hiring new teachers. And that is for a simple reason.
This is not permanent money.
So they focused on one-time expenses instead of ongoing costs that'll stick around even when the federal funding ends. But that's not just limited to construction. Many districts like Aurora West upgraded technology, gave teachers bonuses, and started summer school programs to get their students back on track after the initial disruption of the pandemic.
We had restorative practice coaches that, you know, worked with students, things that either weren't going to be long-term or in some cases, we piloted them and liked them, but then had to figure out what comes out of the budget to make room for that.
Ann Williams at the U46 district in Elgin says they also have to consider if these new programs, projects, and positions are helping students. Are they getting a solid return on their investment? And she says that's not always simple. It's easier to think about with tutors. You pay for tutors. Did the tutoring help students improve in that area? Pretty straightforward. But what about construction? Going from learning in a storage closet to a new classroom, how much does that help students improve academically? William says it's a little harder to measure, but they do try.
Looking at the social, emotional learning and development of students, we have surveys for employee engagement that allow us to evaluate.
Marguerite Rosa is the head of the research center, Edgenomics, and she's worried that many students are not back on track academically.
Illinois broadly, compared to most other states, we saw pretty strong growth in reading, less so in math.
In her dissertation, a question Angie Smith set out to answer was, are these funds going to lead to systemic change in education, or is it just some extra money? She says because it's a one-time thing, it's just extra money. But some say this has made a lasting change. DeBernardi thinks about their new school addition and classroom renovations. Without ESSER, it may have taken another 20 years to build. Another whole generation of students come and gone without the adequate space they need to learn. In LaSalle, students are performing better on state tests than pre-pandemic in both reading and in math, but other districts are still playing catch-up, and now they're playing catch-up without this extra money, and if they didn't spend it wisely, with fewer resources to help their kids. And a new Illinois law mandates all school staff receive training on how to identify and support homeless students. Jimmy Pavola is a homeless liaison with the Kane County Regional Office of Education. He conducts a lot of these trainings already with administrators and truancy workers who do home visits, but this new law solidifies that everyone in a school needs to know the warning signs of housing insecurity.
If a family's having a hard time proving residency, or they're having a hard time, you know, providing birth certificates, immunization records, things of that nature, that should all be a red flag.
He says from there, they can help students receive services they're legally entitled to. They can help with anything from school supplies to paying for school trips or even gas cards for families. School staff will need to receive the training every 2 years. Last school year, Pavola says they served just over 3,300 homeless students in Kane County, and those numbers keep going up. All right, now it's time for my conversation with award-winning middle school PE teacher Tiffany Thurlby. We start off talking about the activities her and her students do to start off the school year.
We are doing basic cooperative gameplay as we introduce rules and the way we do sportsmanship with our students with the start of the year. After this week, we'll then get into our actual first unit of Ultimate Frisbee.
Oh, that's a fun place to start. I'm always interested though, like you mentioned about getting into cooperative gameplay, working together, about like what that looks like for you at the beginning of the school year as you're trying to, you know, make sure everyone knows the rules, how, and just like trying to build relationships within your setting too.
We want to re-stress the fact that we don't really care about who wins and loses. It's about how we handle ourselves and our character in those situations. And we just stress, we want to have fun, but do it respectfully. We're not making fun of someone's abilities or the way that they play the game.
Is there a method to why Ultimate Frisbee comes first, you know, like instructionally, or is it just Ultimate Frisbee is really rad and we like it?
A lot of our students really do enjoy it, but we do put it first because we have a farmer that is on the backside of our school, and his corn protects our football field, so it cuts down on the wind, so the kids actually have an effective throw instead of when the corn goes down. It gets very windy back there, and it's very hard for them to pass to their teammates.
Yeah, that can be tough for Frisbee. However, you know, you might lose a Frisbee or two in the corn, which is someone also grew up in a very rural place. That's always a fun one when you have to wade deep into the corn to try to find your baseball or your Frisbee.
Yes, they always come with scores.
Absolutely. How are they today? Were the kids, were they motivated on a Tuesday in late August when it's hot outside?
Surprisingly, yes. Full of energy, and it carried on our game, and they were all excited when they kept asking. We played hula hut throwdown, where they have built three different huts and their goal is to knock them down on the other side in order to win, and they can rebuild when they get knocked down.
That's fun. I'm always interested in what the first couple weeks look like for different teachers. Actually, I think it was last fall, I spent a couple weeks trying to talk with a bunch of teachers at different various grade levels and different various sorts of schools to ask them about like how they approach these first, you know, like week or two of building relationships, trying to get, again, all those rules and expectations set up. I did not interview a PE teacher, and now I'm thinking that maybe I should have. But again, I'm always interested about that dynamic, because again, I think that that's something that people who aren't educators don't think about, the amount of time and effort and preparation that goes in to even getting that start at the beginning of the school to prepare and make sure, you know, again, people know what the rules and expectations are.
Right. Well, and then we have the day where we need to hand out uniforms, the day that we have to hand out locks and lockers. And for a lot of the students, when they come to the middle school, they have to memorize two locker combinations now, because they have a hallway locker and then their PE locker. So we have to battle through helping students with combinations. So it takes us a little bit to fully get into the swing of things. We have a fitness center that we actually have been in use for the last 3 solid years now. So we go through a big safety protocol day where we teach our kids about the safeties and the expectations up there. And then we have an interruption with our assistant principal with another day of school-wide safeties and expectations. That's typically our first solid week. We almost don't get in any bit of changing because of all those hiccups and interruptions in our schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned the fitness center and kind of weight room that you guys had. I did see online that it seems like over the last, 4 or 5 years, you guys have been doing and been able to do a lot of renovation there.
The fitness center is, I take it to heart. It's my baby. Right around COVID, I had actually been planning with my principal to vision the space out. We had a space called our balcony that had bleachers, and it was never getting used. And our old fitness center was underneath our stage in a basement. The class sizes, it was very unsafe. The weights were too heavy. The space was not ideal. And you would get gray hairs just even standing down there and watching kids move, because you're on edge because of the safety. So we pulled that from our curriculum actually 10 years ago. And then when COVID had happened, my principal comes up to me and says, hey, we have money to spend. Because of COVID, we didn't spend our building budget. You and I have talked about this fitness center. Let's get it rolling. So you tell me to spend money, I'm going to go do it. Over the course of the 3 years, between maintenance, grants, and our building funds, that we had put this beautiful center together that was between 90 to 100,000 to accommodate our students and adapt the space to allow room and safeties and everything to take place.
That's really exciting. So you guys got it fully up and running for a couple of years now then?
Yes. I would say the last 3 years have been a solid go. We've had to make modifications as we've gone up there. We've sat with the high school staff to kind of plan out certain lifts that they want our eighth graders, when they transition into freshmen, certain lifts, so they understand the vocab and how to do those things, but they transition to a bar. So our weights are consisted of a lot of free weights. We are just teaching the form, building through repetition counts through the course of the years, and then docking that all into a portfolio piece. And then when they transition to the high school, they have that 45-pound bar, which is a lot for kids, and that gives them the base to start more successful than they have had students in the past. And they've said it's been working. So the connection between the two is amazing.
Yeah. And it's interesting, like you said, that like, obviously not only did you guys have the safety considerations before that you were worried about, but just the idea that, we want to have a weight program, like a weightlifting program. We just put a bunch of weights in the room, tell the kids to lift it. When, again, we're talking about middle school kids, and that in your situation, like, they were too heavy, which is, again, it's not something maybe people would consider right away.
No. A lot of the free weights started at 15 pounds. And when you have two of them over your head, that's a total of 30 pounds. And it was me holding kids' wrists and guiding them down because their wrists weren't even strong enough to do it. So when we had planned with my principal in laying out the fitness center, I said, we are starting with 5-pound weights. I know it sounds silly, but if kids can't even feel successful from the very beginning, the program's going to flop. So I said, we need to get successful. So those 5 and 7.5 pounders is where we need to start. especially with those sixth grade kids. And then through the course of the years, we're going to drive in the curriculum, pushing those heavier weights with us, supporting them when they need us.
They're like, yeah, they're 5 pound weights, but they're like, yeah, but they're also like 90 pound kids in sixth grade also, you know?
Yep. One of them said today, I'm only 75 pounds. I'm like, my son weighs 75 pounds.
Yeah. And that's interesting though, like as I was thinking about that, that I feel like I didn't at least at that middle school level get an introduction of that kind of weightlifting literacy at that age to just know, again, the fundamentals and the techniques to safely be able to do that. Whereas, again, we're like watching movies or like you want to be on the football team and you think that you're just going to start like throwing back the bench press and you could really like hurt yourself, right? If you're trying to lift something too much. But it's really cool that you guys have that from, again, just trying to build the confidence from a young age that everyone can do these types of things.
Yes. And we even pushed with them because our fitness center in town does allow kids to go work out with their parents, but they do have to be adult supervised. But I'm like, this is a great opportunity for you to build connections with your families and go and do something fitness related that you can tie in into your community.
You are a middle school PE teacher. What year of middle school is this for you? How many years have you been teaching middle school?
This is year 20.
This is year 20 of middle school for you. That's awesome.
It's year 20. Doesn't feel like it.
Well, I'm always interested because, again, I know that we've been through this on other episodes where we've interviewed middle school teachers, but middle school in media historically tends to get a really sometimes a bad rap. And I always want to be there to defend it. And I'm always curious for you, you've been in middle school. This is year 20 for you, especially like it is true that, you know, middle school is a time of transition for a lot of students as they're getting older, you know, trying new things, and that, you know, it can be an anxious time for a lot of students for sure. And also like PE class specifically for like a bunch of different reasons can also be, you know, an anxiety inducing thing for some students that don't maybe feel like they're, you know, the most athletic or they don't feel confident in their own body for whatever reason. For you, what do you feel like is like this thing that one of the things that you find to be really, really special about middle school PE specifically and, you know, teaching athletics at this specific age range?
I love stressing the fact that, yes, I have my running background and I have told kids I struggled from day one. And I said, you guys think I'm great. I'm fast. I said, but I've put through the years of training. I said, but in the PE setting, I do not expect you to be the best athlete. I expect you to show great sportsmanship, you know, play with the equipment respectfully and interact respectfully. I stress that more than just the rules of the game. The rules I can almost care less about. And I think the kids start to understand that because it's the relationships that we build that are the most important. And then the fun comes with it because we can build those relationships within each other, it relaxes the classroom environment a lot more.
Yeah. What if, again, over 20 years, I'm sure you've learned a lot about how to build that comfort in your gym over the course of a school year to make sure that, you know, students do feel safe and comfortable enough to be able to have fun in the class.
I always tell kids, because everything is weird in middle school. And I finally started telling them, you know, what is normal to me may be weird to you. But what you are normal may be weird to me. I said, we are all in our inner weird. So embrace it and love it. Take that weird and move on. And I said, get your big bad nerd out and just move forward with life.
Right. And that's got to be a really fun thing for you every year when you see a student who comes in and maybe they are a little bit hesitant about PE. Maybe they have had bad experiences in the past, or maybe, again, for whatever reason, they just don't feel 100% confident and comfortable with themselves. To get to that point where you start to see them not thinking about that and them just having fun with what they're doing has to be a really special thing that you get to see.
I love those moments. And I even go and have those personal conversations with those kids, like, hey, it was awesome to see you out and moving today. This was probably the best day ever. Like, and then they sit there and smile, and you know they take that home with them. And again, you want kids to feel comfortable because it can be an awkward environment. So it's like when you see those moments of light, you go and you encourage it and, you know, you compliment them.
And it's also fun that you get to, like, students get to discover the things that they really like and are interested in athletically, whether it be lifting or whether it be playing ultimate frisbee or something like that. I think about it all the time. Like, you and I are both runners, and I think that I can speak for all of us when I say that running is not for everyone. It's not something that everyone enjoys. And so, you know, sometimes I fall into the trap because, of course, I'm living in my own mind where I'm like, well, of course everyone likes running. You know, I'll invite my friends to go on, like, a run or hike with me in through the woods, and they'll be like, Peter, this is just, like, I know that you like this, but I'm a different person. This is not as fun for me. But, like, trying to embrace that, you know, it could be anything that could be, you just want to find a thing athletically or physically that they enjoy just to get active. And it might not be the same thing that you do, but to find that one thing that excites them.
Right. And that's the goal every year.
And so you are in year 20 as a PE teacher in middle school. I'm curious, how long have you wanted to be a teacher for as long as you can remember? Is it something that from a young age you wanted to do, or was it something that came to you a little bit later on in life?
If I wasn't going to do teaching, my second career choice was cosmetology, which is complete opposite.
It's a pretty hard pivot, Tiffany.
Yes, it is. But as I had gotten older, I struggled in school, not behaviorally, but reading and comprehension was not my thing. And I was considered special ed through elementary school and then started phasing out middle school. And then it ended in high school. I tested out. I struggled if I wanted to, I thought I wanted to teach until my middle school was 5 through 8. And I had a teacher who made a negative impact on my life because I read so slow that she would cut me off, or kids would laugh if I messed up on a word and she would cut me off and have another student take over. And that was just hard for me. And
that's
I was trying. And my 7th grade math teacher was who started to turn the wheels for me. I love to challenge myself. I mean, even still currently now, but he saw that and ran with it. And in math, there was extra credit assignments in the back of the textbook. I don't know if we're similar age, but in the back of the book, they had these different color pages and he would assign those for extra credit work. Well, I started doing them. And then I was the kid in class who had 120 points in extra credit and the kids were blown away. But it was, again, it was something that pushed me and drived me, and I did it all on my own. But then he was there to offer the support and the encouragement. And if I struggled on a test, he was there to show me the right way. And then in high school, it was almost kind of the same way. So I had some great teachers and great coaches who, you know, offered their advice because they knew I just struggled with some stuff, even though I wasn't considered special ed anymore in high school, but just guided me. And I'm like, I really want to do that. But I kind of, not to shame the teacher that made fun of me back in the day, but I don't want to be that teacher. And if I can make a difference in someone's life, that's what I want to do.
Well, it's interesting, you know, a lot of times on the show, again, it's either people had a teacher who they really loved. Again, like you mentioned, your math teacher that you had that made a big difference on you, where they say, I want to be like that person and make that difference that they had on me. Or it's the other thing that you described, which is I had a teacher that did not come through for me, and I want to be for my students what I didn't get to have. And so you got both of that. You got the good. You could see the impact the teachers could have, the good and the bad.
Yeah.
And so at what point through that journey, it sounds like you kind of had the idea a little bit that you did want to be a teacher. Was that pretty much throughout your life, that even when you were younger, that was something that you thought, well, maybe this could be for me?
Yes, because I would play in the basement with my sister. I'm an identical twin. and we would set up our stuffed animals, and we had a chalkboard, and we would teach our stuffies and run a class.
So were you both teaching, or would you teach your sister too?
Yeah, we were both teaching our stuffies.
That's awesome. So that was something that from a really young age that you knew you wanted to do. What about teaching physical education specifically?
I always like sports, but don't ask me what my favorite team is, because I don't watch traditional football or baseball on TV. I just love being fit and always just even taking care of myself. I fell in love with cross country and track, and I had great coaches for it. And I just wanted to bring my excitement in from if I'm excited about this with running, I can teach this in other sports and, you know, hopefully make a difference in someone's life in a positive way.
I'm curious, what was it about cross country? Do you remember that initially you fell in love with? Was it just the running? Because cross country is so unique and running in general, right? Where there is the competitive part of it, where you are running against other people and trying to win and trying to place as high as you can. But obviously, like so many other sports, it is so in your own head and you are competing with yourself in such a large part of it. Do you remember about when you started initially falling in love with that sport?
I fell in love with it after I got mad. So I did not do cross country my freshman year, and I ran track. And I knew I always loved the mile. And my coach had sat down with each athlete individually, and he was going to be our cross country coach that following fall. And I knew I wanted to run. He had asked what our goals were, and I said, "Coach, I want to be on varsity." And I was about mid JV level at that point. And you're talking about, I was a big high school. Our cross country team was between 30 and 40 girls, and you can only run your top 7 in varsity. And he goes, "Well, kiddo, not next year, maybe your junior year, probably your senior year. Don't ever tell me that I can't do anything, because I will prove you wrong."
Challenge accepted at that point.
Challenge accepted, yes. And so I joined cross country. We had summer camp, and come our first race, I was the number 5 girl.
Wow.
I don't want people telling me that I can't do things in life. I will challenge.
Yeah. And so you fell in love with cross country, and you've gotten the chance to coach cross country since you've been a teacher too, right?
I have. I coached cross country for 7 years and then had to put it on hold as I had a family.
How was being a cross country coach after, you know, obviously falling in love with it, doing it yourself?
Oh, I still loved it. But the best part about the challenge while coaching was it opened up their eyes. I remember the first time I took the kids out, and this was transitioning from an old coach. They ran 7 miles in a practice, and they've never done that before. And it was like, I said, "Guys, you sat here on this comfort line for so long. Now you've suppressed over it. Look at yourselves. Do you wonder why you had been sitting back there and holding yourselves back?" I said, "But now look at what you can do."
And so like with cross country, that's also, and you're a middle school teacher, and so you do get multiple years to get to know students as well. But that's something that's also very special about coaching too, is that like your coach did with you, where, you know, starting off as a freshman and you're hoping to make varsity and all that journey, that you get the same thing where you get to see this really cool thing of these kids starting off as maybe a little bit unsure about themselves as freshmen, and that journey all the way through them being, you know, seniors on the team.
And the best part is giving them their starts from when they were a freshman, because a lot of them didn't track where they were, where they started as a freshman, and then where they ended as a senior, and then the chunks of time that they had taken off because of the builds of the way that the program was structured, they were in shock and didn't even realize how far they have truly come.
Right. Yeah. And I bet to a degree you get to do that within your PE classes as well. And I'm sure that's also fun to track growth for them.
Oh, I always laugh. I'm like, my 6th graders are my baby stage. And then when they become 7th grade and they revisit a unit, you see the connections happen and you see the skill progressions start to form together. And then by the time they're in eighth grade, it's like we have solid gameplays going, and it's awesome because you have volleys back and forth that are more in control. The rules of the game being applied in different areas. It's weird how you, and it's fun as a teacher to see those stages through the years.
Yeah. And so not only are you seeing that skill progression through the years, right? And you're seeing what your lesson plans and what you were thinking of come to fruition in all these different ways. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about misconceptions and, you know, stigmas that people have about middle school in general. And, you know, I think people sometimes hold the same thing about PE and, of course, that PE teaching is that, you know, you come in there and you're like, we're playing kickball today. And that's all of the thought that goes into it. We just set up a couple bases. And, you know, I always say I am not a teacher. However, when I was a senior in high school, I did get the opportunity when I was in a sports medicine class to essentially like intern and help teach fourth and fifth grade PE at my school in my district down in Sandwich. And that was such an eye-opening experience because the teacher that I was helping was in the process of like finishing her master's degree. And so I was seeing all of the work and the study and the writing that was going, all of the prep that goes into that. And also then finally, like at the end, I got to, you know, take my turn to write up a lesson plan. I think that we played Capture the Flag, I think ended up being the activity that I taught. But having to think through, why are we doing this? What's the purpose of the lesson plan? What are the standards and practices that we're trying to show and showcase through this? Can you give people a little bit of the behind the music, behind the scenes of what it's like when you're planning out activities and lessons of, again, thinking about why we're doing this, what the standards are, all that type of work that goes on behind the scenes?
Well, first, I will tell you, when I first started, my PE curriculum is a lot different. I don't teach the same way as when I had originally taught. Going through the national boards process and getting certified has definitely taught me more on how to create a curriculum as a whole for the whole student. And not that I wasn't doing this stuff before, but it definitely helped sharpen and impact the way that I was doing teaching. It allowed me to get students to more personally reflect on their fitness. And I started to notice more challenges in that way within students' own personal interests to push themselves. The way that I now organize and do different lessons, because I have students that have higher impact special needs levels in my class, interest levels, like we had talked about, you know, one student doesn't like an activity where another one is. And I try to organize and structure the lessons based on meeting all interest needs of the kids, whether it's intellectually or whether it is physically. So it has definitely changed. I do a lot more goal setting personally with students to, you know, show that I am not looking for them to be the best team player on the team. I am looking for them to be the best within themselves.
I'm curious, kind of, again, you mentioned goal setting. Is that a big part of that self-reflection piece, again, of how you try to build that in to get students to reflect on what they're doing?
A lot of it's within their own individual fitness plans. When we go into like your fitness testing weeks, I have a chart for them. They record what they have completed for the fitness testing. They tell me what a goal is. And we talk about setting a realistic goal. Because in the pacer, depending on where you're at in the pacer, one or two steps or one or two paces could be challenging if you were a kid that was at 90. Or if you're a kid, you know that's hit your max point. So we talk about setting those goals, but then I go back and reassess what they did. And then I put my teacher goal in there, and we do that twice a year. And it's a nice way for me to quietly communicate with each individual student. So again, that embarrassment factor is not there. On their weight charts, we rotate every 6 weeks because I do lose a class in the morning for 6 weeks for health. And then I have kids that were in health and come back into my PE program. So a nice way for them to, one of the kids in the past when we were designing the fitness center had said, I don't remember what I did in the past, and it would be nice to be able to look that up. So on their weight room portfolios, we created tabs with the rotations in color. So if the kid ever misses because of their health rotation, they can always go back and check on the past tab to see where they can hopefully start in their new rotation and keep building with their progressions. And then at the end of each rotation, we talk about, you know, what are things that I can do in the weight room to help you with your own personal strength? What are things that you would like to see additional help out, like additionally added to the weight room? Because I'm still, it's still new to me. And if there's anything that I can do to keep student engagement and add it into our program, I would love to do it.
Tiffany, you mentioned the PACER test. And as we were talking, I was like, I wonder if the PACER, like before you mentioned it, I was like, I wonder if the PACER test is still around, which for people that don't know is an assessment system that is used for both like cardio, for like running. I think that we used to have it for sure, like sit-ups and push-ups too. I don't know if it's in other areas before, but the question I had, and this is super specific, Tiffany, and it's a recording. It's like a voice over a loudspeaker. At least it was in my case. I don't know if it still is like that. My question for you, Tiffany, does the PACER test still have kind of a Southern accent?
No, it's more robotic.
Because for some reason, and maybe this is something that I have created as a figment of my own imagination, but I remember it being kind of a robotic Southern accent, and I will like do an impression of it with some of my friends sometimes, and now I wonder how accurate that actually is and how much of it is just me doing an impression of my impression over the years.
I think it's more robotic now.
In about 2014, it was kind of a down 28 type of situation is how I remember it. But I was very curious to see if that's still, if the PACER test was still around. Glad to hear it. I only had a few more questions for you, Tiffany. And so we can kind of run through these ones a little faster. I don't want to keep you all afternoon here. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about it is I know that you do a lot of work with the, and I'm going to get this acronym correctly, the Illinois Association of Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance. And you just won an award. You just won a Middle School Professional of the Year award this year, which, congratulations. That's fantastic. How did you find out about it?
I've known about it. And I actually had three individuals that came to me directly and said, you need to apply. And just the application process to me was different because you almost have to be told to apply. But then when you go through the application process, you're filling everything out about you. It's almost like a brag board. And
not all teachers are comfortable doing that.
No, it threw me out of my comfort zone. But I'm like, you know, if I had three people telling me to come and apply, they must see something. So I did it for the respects of them. And then it goes through districts. So your district nominates you and then you apply. And then they can even nominate other teachers in the same level. And then your application gets pushed on to the actual state level. And then the state has their own nomination committee. And they go through all the applications per area and then pick their candidate.
And so how did you find out that you had won?
I got a phone call on a Saturday, and it was one of the committee members, and she had reached out and called me through cell phone, and we had a nice conversation.
That's awesome. What was your reaction?
I was shocked at first. It took a while for it to settle in because I know there was other applicants at the middle school level that went through, and they're great people too. And you always just wonder, like, what did they find that stood out in the application for to be the win, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's exciting, though. And then I think that is there an event later on this year where you get to go to and hopefully hold up some kind of obscenely large trophy, I imagine? I hope so, at least.
They do a plaque, but there is an award ceremony.
We'll take a plaque.
We'll take it. There's an award ceremony at our state convention in December, and they do an awards banquet for all the professionals that have been selected in their areas.
That's outstanding. I wanted to ask about that, and I also wanted to ask about, and I don't know if it's through the same organization, but I did see that you've been done some presentations at various events, and I saw one that this might be over the past couple years or so, but I saw that you gave a presentation about boy band dancing and teaching that.
Yes.
And I am very curious if you've been able to implement it into the curriculum. Have we had a unit on Backstreet Boys dances at the middle school yet?
We have.
We have.
I laugh because my students are always, hey, Miss Thurlby, can you knock out this move? Hey, Miss Thurlby, can you do this move? So I actually sat them down one day and I said, guys, you ask me to bust out your moves and I don't complain. I knock them out and we all have a good laugh.
What dances are they asking you to do? What are they asking you to throw down?
They asked me to floss. They asked
me. Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
I'm not current with terms on their.
well, you're breaching me the wrong way.
Whatever this thing, and then you scoot kind of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I also don't know what I'm talking about. So I don't know what the term is either, but that I could see it and I recognize it for sure. But yes, so now you get to show them some of the dances too.
Yeah. I laugh because we did Motown Philly, Boys the Men. And I said, now that I have busted out your moves, you were going to bust out some of my moves when I was your age in middle school. And it was one of the best days. The kids, we just had a good laugh. And I said, you now go home and have a good dinner conversation with your parents because a lot of them are about my age and you guys can all rock them out together in the evening.
So have we just gotten to Boys to Men? Have we moved into some other boy bands yet? Or do we have any that you're like, I'd love to get to this dance maybe?
There's one that I teach every year and it was actually taught by Susan Flynn and I will present it this year, just kind of not reinvent the wheel, but it is one that my kids just love and it's through Crazy Frog XLF. And it is one that my kids love. It's a partners dance and then we move around the gym and they switch partners, but it's fast, it's quick. And I love the team part about it because it just I need a partner now. So just come here and they grab whoever's not with a partner. And that's one thing that I always love to teach is, we move through things fastly. And when you need somebody, you grab whoever it is, it doesn't matter who it is. You just need to get the task done and you guys do it successfully. And that's one of the things I like teaching through that dance. I don't want to reinvent her wheel, but she deserves all the credit for it. But it is one that is still loved by my class year by year. So I will even I'm presenting that this year. And then there's a line dance through Celebration of the 70s that I will also be working with the kids on this year.
I think that we did the Cotton Eye Joe. Cotton Eye Joe was big when I was in middle school, but we didn't get to Boys to Men, unfortunately. I'm glad they are now. I also had to ask, and we've touched on running in this process, but people who have listened to the show probably know that I'm a runner, that my dad is a huge marathoner, my brother is a huge marathoner. You have done several ultra marathons, correct?
Yes.
And for people that are like, oh my God, I know what about a marathon, but an ultra marathon, these are 50-mile races typically?
50s. I've done 50 twice.
You've done 50 twice. Do you have the desire to do 100 at this point? Is that on the radar for you yet? Or is 50 good?
Currently 50 is good for right now.
yeah.
You're hurt in ways that you don't ever think that you're going to hurt, even when you marathon run. but right now with my kids being so young, I try to, even on my long runs, I try to sneak out between 4:30 and 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, we're talking my kids, they're self-sufficient, but they're 9 and they're 7. So they still want mom. I love our snuggle time in the morning. So I try to go and hit the pavement before my kids wake up. So we have the rest of our day to do things. I know 100 mile of training is not that much more intense, but you do have to go out for probably a good 6 hour long run just to keep your feet on the pavement for a training day. And I'm not there yet with my kids. I've always said if I entertained it, I would do it when I was older and maybe I would say closer to retirement. So I do have that time to fully enjoy the training, but I still have my time with my kids right now, and that's what I need.
Yeah, hard to skip out for a quick 75 before breakfast. That's a tough one. That's a tough one. But 50 miles, again, like I've done 2 half marathons. I've not done a full marathon, but it's something that it's a big conversation in my family all the time with the amount of marathons my dad and my brother do. I know that for that kind of distance running, and I'm curious about 50, I feel like being out there for, you know, 50 miles, how many hours are you out there typically, like, in those runs?
8 hours and 45 minutes.
So 8 hours and almost 9 hours running. I feel like you really get to learn a lot about yourself through that. What was that first 50 like for you? And did you feel like you came away with, like, wow, this was a really wild experience?
Believe it or not, my first 50 miler, I almost quit. I had gotten such an upset stomach, and you're going to the bathroom a lot. And the day ended up being 80 degrees and it was hot. And normally the average temperature range is 60, 65. So the race in itself was hot, and with my stomach not feeling good, I didn't know how much longer I could sustain my electrolytes and my energy level. And
yeah, are we just pounding gels and bars and energy beans, anything that you got on you?
I was, and my saving grace was my brother-in-law gave me a pill that he uses for his stomach when he gets an upset stomach, and it saved me at mile 38. But I ran 20 miles with an awful stomach. And I was ready to just give it up. And I'm not much of a quitter. So I'm like, you know what? It's starting to feel good. So let's keep pushing through, keep pushing through. And then I was so glad I did it. And then, you know, a couple days after, my husband's laughing at me because I'm just gimping around the house. But he goes, you know, I feel bad that you didn't have the race you wanted and the run you wanted. I think you need to go back and redo it. And he is one that will complain, you have to get up at 4:30 in the morning again. Come on, just sleep in. So for him to support that and actually say, I think you need to go give this another shot, that meant the world to me. So I re-registered and I took 45 minutes off my time.
You had the run that you wanted to have? Mm-hmm. You know, in running, in long distance running, people talk a lot about this idea of like the pain cave. I'm sure you've heard the term before, where there's always a moment during the race where maybe not that you think that you're going to have to quit, but that you're like, oh my God, what am I doing? What is this? And that if you can fight your way through that, if you can push your way through that, that sometimes you're able to emerge on the other side of it. And sometimes there is like a kind of a euphoria afterwards where you're like, man, now we're just, everything else is kind of just gravy after we've got through that. On your second run, the race that you wanted to have, did you have that moment where you're like, we're really doing this?
Yes. And even in the first one, my sister laughed. She goes, Tiff, you were at mile 38 and it was one of the last big rest stops. And I knew my pack was getting low. So I texted her. I said, I'm going to throw you my pack. Need to run to the bathroom quick, and I need full water refill and electrolyte refill. So we had a tag team system going, and I said, I'm at mile 38, 12 to go. And I was off. I'm like, yes, I'm almost done. But like 12 miles is a lot of miles for people. Yeah, there's 12 more miles to go.
Oh my God. Tiffany, I only have like 2 things for you now, which is the question we like to end everyone on. And I'll phrase it to you in 2 different ways. One is, there's just something about physical education you wish more people knew.
It's not just PE. It's not a gym. Gym's my classroom. It is in my setting to create the whole child mentally and physically. to install those positive mindsets within each kid that they can do anything that they put their mind to. Again, breaking through those that fine line of comfort, you know, stepping over it and trying to push yourself to pursue a little bit more. Some kids I can push harder than others, and I want them to feel successful.
And then last question, just something about being a teacher you wish more people knew.
It can be a tough profession, but I think it's probably one of the most loving professions. One of the things I love in this small community, I have really gotten to know families, and I feel like there are so many kids and families that I've gotten to take under my wing through the years. And I feel like we have such close connections and bonds. And now when I see them around in the community, we have awesome conversations. And I think that's the best part about my job, is like the love that you build, not just in the classroom, but outside.
That was Tiffany Thurlby, award-winning PE teacher at Genoa Kingston Middle School. Thank you so much for listening to Teacher's Lounge. As always, feel free to nominate a teacher in your life to be on the show. It's how we get all of our great guests like Tiffany. You can send them our way to teacherslounge@niu.edu. And please continue sending your story ideas as well. And wherever you're hearing the podcast, subscribe, leave us a rating, share whatever you can do. It gets even more perspectives on the show. You can subscribe to our Teacher's Lounge newsletter over at WNIJ.org. A big thank you to the Northern Illinois band Kind Ofs for the music you hear each and every episode of the show. And I've been your host, Peter Medlin, and we'll be back with more Teacher's Lounge very soon. See ya.